What are you doing? Then I'm just, oh, there's good news.
It's time again for Donald
Trump.
Theater.
No one knows what is up or down, black or white,
legal
or
impeachable.
Everything is make believe in Donald
Trump.
Theater.
So let's
pull
the
curtain
back.
We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
The things that this show has called him, this approach is, I guess it's kind of like we're living in the Twilight Zone.
These four deaths that we have been discussing for the better part of the last week, Staff Sergeant Brian Black, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Johnson, Staff Sergeant Dustin Wright, and Sergeant LaDavid Johnson.
What can you say from you so far about the soldiers that were killed in Niger, and what do you have...
I've written them personal letters. They've been sent, or they're going out tonight, but they're written during the weekend. I will let... some point during the period of time, call the parents and the families. Because I have done that traditionally. Yeah, I feel very, very badly about that. I always feel badly. It's the toughest calls I have to make are the calls where,
this happens. Soldiers are killed.
It's a very difficult thing. It gets to a point where,
you know, you make four or five of them in one day. It's a very tough day. And for me, that's by far the toughest.
The traditional way, if you look at
President Obama and other presidents,
most of them didn't make calls. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate. When I think I'm
able to do it.
They
have made the ultimate sacrifice.
So generally, I would say that I like to call. I'm going to be calling them. I want a little time to pass, but I'm going to be calling them. I have, as you know, since I've been president. I have. But in addition, I actually wrote letters individually to the soldiers we're talking about. They're going to be going out either today or tomorrow.
That new controversy facing President Trump. He's taking heat for an alleged insensitive remark he made to the widow of a slain Army sergeant.
Details of the conversation come from a Democratic congresswoman who overheard the call.
I did hear him say, I'm sure he knew what he was signing up for.
The comments were certainly, I think, taken very far out of context by the media. And if there's any frustration, I think that's where it should be focused.
He was probably trying to convey a heartfelt message, but instead, the people interpreted it as him disrespecting the troops.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it, and she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said, and I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is... sounded like a lovely woman, did not say what the congresswoman said.
I know this is the first time that you're hearing the president's tweet read to you. So when he says that you've totally fabricated what he said to the wife of the soldier and he has proof, what's your response?
Well, I don't know what kind of proof he could be talking about. I'm not the only person that was in the car. And I have proof, too. This man is a sick man. He's cold-hearted, and he feels no pity or sympathy for anyone. This is a grieving widow who is 6 months pregnant. This is a young woman. She's only 24 years old, and she has two other kids, 2 years old and 6 years old. And when she actually hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, He didn't even know his name. That's the worst part.
So, Congressman, let's talk about that. What did you hear? Tell us about this phone call.
I did hear him say, I'm sure he knew what he was signing up for, but it still hurts.
Kelly didn't just step into the fight with Congresswoman Frederica. He started throwing punches.
I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the President of the United States to a young wife. Absolutely stuns me. And I thought, at least that was sacred.
Okay. Now, first of all, when he says she was listening in on the call, it makes it sound like she tapped the military widow's phone and she was sitting across the street in a creepy white van. But no. She heard the call because she's been close friends with the family for years. She knew the soldier personally, and the family asked her to be in the car with them on the way to meet the caskets. Also, it's a little weird that John Kelly is saying this when he told us himself that he was on the other end of the call listening in with Trump. And I know he was babysitting, but that's not the point. Now, what added even more fuel to this fire was that General Kelly didn't just go after the substance of what the congresswoman said about the call. He went after her character.
I'll end with this. In October, April, rather, of 2015, I was still on active duty, and I went to the dedication of the new FBI field office in Miami. And a congresswoman stood up, and in the long tradition of empty barrels making the most noise, stood up there and all of that, and talked about how she was instrumental in getting the funding for that building. And how she took care of her constituents because she got the money, and she just called up President Obama, and on that phone call, he gave the money, the $20 million to build a building. And she sat down. And we were stunned. Stunned that she'd done it. Even for someone that is that empty a barrel, we were stunned.
Kelly successfully maligned the congresswoman, right? People believed his story because John Kelly would never say something that wasn't true. Or so we thought.
Kelly got crucial facts wrong in his very public and biting critique.
While the congresswoman touts her efforts in getting the building named for the fallen FBI agents, there's no discussion of securing funding for the project. And she takes pains to thank the law enforcement officials in attendance and praise the slain FBI agents being honored.
Stand up now so that we can applaud you and what you do. Stand up. We are proud.
What a monster. Saluting law enforcement, what a monster.
When Laisha Johnson, the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, one of four Special Forces troops killed in that deadly ambush in Niger.
And we was literally on the airport strip getting ready to get out. And he called Master Sergeant Neil's phone. I asked Master Sergeant Neil to put his phone on speaker so my aunt and uncle could hear as well. And he goes on to saying his statement as what he said was...
The president.
Yes, the president said that he knew what he signed up for, but it hurts anyways. And it made me cry because I was very angry at the tone of his voice and how he said it. Like he couldn't remember my husband's name. The only way he remembered my husband's name because he told me he had my husband report in front of him. And that's when he actually said LaDavid. I heard him stumbling on trying to remember my husband's name. And that what hurt me the most, because if my husband is out here fighting for our country and he risked his life for our country, why can't you remember his name?
I was really nice to her. I respect her. I respect her family. I certainly respect LaDavid, who I, by the way, called LaDavid right from the beginning. Just so you understand, they put a chart in front, LaDavid. It says LaDavid Johnson. So I called right from the beginning. There's no hesitation. One of the great memories of all time.
It is an obscene display. I can't
think of a more disgusting moment in American politics in my lifetime than the one we have fallen into this sewer over these issues. The person who did it, of course, is the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who sought to make himself look good by disparaging his predecessor's commitments to the families of fallen American heroes who gave what Lincoln described as the last full measure of devotion to the country.
Yo, quickly, we need a list of Gold Star families. We're in a fight with a black lady in a cowboy hat, and we need to borrow $25,000.
And in another authoritarian turn, when the White House was asked on Friday about Kelly misstating those facts, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said reporters could not question Kelly because he's a four-star Marine general.
If you want to get into a debate with a four-star Marine general, I think that that's something highly inappropriate.
Trump has a point. It's inappropriate to question a Marine general. Like, for example, retired four-star Marine General John Allen, who criticized Trump at last year's Democratic convention.
They had a general named John Allen, and I never met him. And he got up and he started talking about Trump. Never met him. And you know who he is? He's a failed general.
Sheila Murphy's son, Army Specialist Etienne Murphy, was killed during a vehicle rollover incident this past May in Syria, and they have yet to hear from the White House. Calvin and Sheila Murphy join us now. Mr. and Mrs. Murphy, we're so... Mrs. Murphy, we're so sorry that you're reliving all of this. Has this week been particularly hard for you?
Every day is hard. Every day... It gets worse. It doesn't get better. It gets worse because I'm still looking for my child to come through the door.
Did you hear from the White House? Have you heard from the White House at all?
No, I haven't. But it's okay. It doesn't matter if I hear from the White House or not because it's not really about, like I said, a call or a letter. I just want people to remember my son, Specialist Etienne Murphy, and all the other Gold Star moms, Mrs. Johnson, all of those who are grieving. Trust me, none of us want to be in this position, and the worst thing I've ever been called is a Gold Star mom.
Army Corporal Dylan Baldridge was killed in Afghanistan in June. He and two fellow soldiers were gunned down by an Afghan police officer suspected of an insider attack. Baldridge's father was disturbed by the details of his son's death and expressed that to President Trump in a phone call. Mr. Trump then apparently took an unusual step for a commander-in-chief. He offered money. Dan Lamothe helped break that story for The Washington Post, joins me now. Thanks for joining us. So how did this phone call go?
Yes. So several weeks after this soldier's death, the president made a call to North Carolina, where the father lives. They had a conversation that the father describes mostly as respectful. The father expressed some frustration with the way that the death gratuity, basically a benefit that the family received, was going to his ex-wife rather than his son Park to him. And the president's response caught him by surprise. He said, well, I'm going to make sure that we write you a $25,000 check, basically for your troubles.
And did that check ever arrive? The White House said that they sent it late today.
Yes. So we reached out this morning and received no response for several hours. As of today, the father had not received a check. So the assumption here would be that the check had not been sent until we reached out to the White House this morning to verify this father's report.
And you discovered this conversation in kind of the story has a larger context. You reached out to several different families, Gold Star families, for what happened after their family member died.
Yes. I mean, we've got this larger conversation this week. It's a very sensitive, very politically charged conversation. And at the center of it are grieving families. So we thought it was important to reach out to those grieving families. Some of them obviously and understandably did not want to speak to us, but quite a few of them did. And we found that about half of the ones we reached 13 different families that have lost loved ones since Trump became president. And half of them had received calls from the president, half of them had not. The majority of the ones who had not were upset when they heard his comments earlier this week that he had called all of them.
And there was even some families, or at least one family, that had not received anything, no phone call or even a letter.
Tell us about your experience with contact with the White House, with the president, with the vice president.
At the dignified transfer in Dover, I was extremely honored to have had Vice President Pence there. He spent a great deal of time talking to me, and it wasn't an uncomfortable type of thing. He really was just a very genuine human being, and he shared his condolences, and he talked to me like he knew me forever, so it meant a lot for me to have him there. Soon after, maybe it was around the same time, I know that I was meeting with my casualty officer, and he received a call from the White House, I'm not exactly sure who, but he was told that I needed to be by my phone for the next few days because the president would be calling me to express his condolences on behalf of the nation, and I never received the phone call.
Kivzar Khan.
Khan is the father of Army Captain Humayun Khan, who was killed in Iraq by a suicide bomber in 2004.
When you saw all of this attention to the president's call, what did you think?
I was disheartened. I was shocked. Two words came to mind. I wish somebody would advise him dignity, most dignity for these families, for my four brave sons that were protecting the United States under most difficult circumstances, privacy and dignity, restraint. He was not advised of those sentiments, of those words.
In 2015, Trump said this about McCain's record in Vietnam.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay?
If you'll remember, during the Vietnam War, President Tough Guy received 5 deferments from the draft, 4 for education, 1 for bone spurs in his heels. That doesn't mean Donald Trump didn't see action. Here he is on Howard Stern bragging about how he handled STDs in the New York dating scene.
It is a dangerous world out there.
It is.
Scary. It's like Vietnam, Vietnam
era. It is your personal Vietnam, isn't it?
It is my personal
Vietnam. It is. You've
Vietnam.
Said that many
I feel
times.
Like a great and very brave soldier.
Yesterday, John McCain, an actual war hero, weighed in on Trump's deferments.
One aspect of the conflict, by the way, that I will never, ever countenance is that we drafted the lowest income level of America and the highest income level found a doctor that would say that they had a bone spur. That is wrong.
But isn't it kind of galling when he says that, when he casts aspersions upon your service, when he got out because of bone spurs? Doesn't that ticks me off and a lot of people in this country.
Joy, I think the important thing is for us to help those veterans who need help.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful life. I'm the luckiest person you will ever see on this show. So what I cared about was when he was talking about other prisoners of war, including our World War II guys who are still around, many of them. Mm-hmm. And there's a individual that lives in Phoenix, and he's 92. And he weighed 110 pounds when he got out of the German prison camp. Wow. And he said to me, he said, Senator McCain, why does the president not like me? You know, that's hard to explain to a 92-year-old man. So that's what they want to say about me. You know, Teddy Roosevelt, I'm in the arena. Yeah. I'm in the arena. I love the fight.
Right.
Also, because he warned you the next day. Yeah. You did hear that. He said, oh, you need to be careful.
Yeah, because he may not be nice.
He might not be nice.
It won't be pretty, he said. It won't be pretty.
He said he would fight back.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be pretty. Are you scared?
Doesn't he look scared?
Did you read my cards, Earl?
I mentioned that I had faced greater challenges.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But the point is, I think, is that we've got to, I hate to keep going back to the big picture, we've got to lift the national dialogue. Let's stop insulting each other.
Right, yeah.
Let's start respecting each other's views.
Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times, it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. We see a fading confidence in the value of free markets and international trade, forgetting that conflict, instability, and poverty follow in the wake of protectionism. We've seen the return of isolationist sentiments.
I am aware that there is a segment of my party that believes that anything short of complete and unquestioning loyalty to a president who belongs to my party is unacceptable and suspect. If I have been critical, it is not because I relish criticizing the behavior of the President of the United States. If I have been critical, it is because I believe it is my obligation to do so, and as a matter and duty of conscience.
I've seen no evolution in an upward way. I mean, as a matter of fact, I would say it appears to me that it's almost devolving.
But you supported the president. Do you regret that now?
What do you think? It appears to be the governing model of this White House to purposely divide.
Is the president of the United States a liar?
The president has great difficulty with the truth on many issues. Much of what he said is untrue, but all of it is untrue. And some of that you wouldn't be able to check. But so he's utterly untruthful. I want him to support diplomatic efforts, not embarrass and really malign efforts that are underway.
If you compared the White House to an adult daycare center, you said he's putting us perhaps on the path towards World War III, and said most of your colleagues agree with you behind closed doors. Any second thoughts about those comments?
No, George, I don't make comments that I haven't thought about.
None of these appalling features of our current politics should ever be regarded as normal. We must never allow ourselves to lapse into thinking that that is just the way things are now. When the next generation asks us, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you speak up? What are we going to say? Mr. President, I rise today to say enough. Because politics can make us silent when we should speak, and silence can equal complicity. I have children and grandchildren to answer to, and so, Mr. President, I will not be complicit or silent.
Police in Florida arrested three men who allegedly made Nazi salutes, repeated Hitler chants, and then shot at a group of protesters after white supremacist leader Richard Spencer's speech at the University of Florida on Thursday. The gunshot narrowly missed the group of 6 to 8 protesters striking a business behind them.
Thanks to the US
Coast Guard.
Peter Serafinovich, Husker, Du, Matthew, Ship, William, Parker, Golden, Earring,
thanks to
Sarah, Huckabee, Sanders, Lawrence, Matt, Lauer, Frederica, Wilson, Trevor, Noah, Allison, Camerota, Kelly, Maisha, Johnson, Steve, Schmidt, Seth, Myers, Sheila, Calvin, Murphy, Dan, Lamar, Jolly, Gail, King, K-H-I-Z-R, Khan, Stephen, Colbert, Howard, Stern, McCain, Bahar, Whoopi, Goldberg,
George W.
Bush, Jeff, Flake, Robert Corker.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.